Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing and indeed the largest segment of society today. To those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, counterproductive, rotten to the core, and cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this program anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. It is true. Tunisia is ablaze in gunfire, and it is stained in blood. Tunisia was the only place that was considered a positive of what was misnamed the Arab Spring. It is amazing that the media still don't know what occurred, don't know why it occurred, don't understand the consequence of what occurred, and can't make any of the connections between what occurred and the hundreds of thousands that are dying throughout the Islamic world. The simple truth is that Barack Hussein Obama, who was born of a Muslim father, educated or indoctrinated in Islamic madrasas, and then who received further indoctrination in America's most prestigious universities, which are now national cathedrals to socialist secular humanism, blended these things together to form a worldview that is equal parts narcissistic, Islamic, and indeed communist. And in so doing, he sees his own unique worldview as that which ought to be imposed, because he views himself as superior to all things. He is opposed to everyone who has ever been successful on their own. The nature of all of this began in Ernst, was ignited, if you will, what's now called the Arab Spring, was united when Barack Hussein Obama made a speech at the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, in the very university where today's modern terrorist institutions were born. And in that speech, he told Muslims that America was not at war with them, never had been, and never would be. It was, of course, false. The first war America fought as a nation was against Islam. And the fact of the matter is, America is still fighting Islam. But then he went on to say that this was their time, the time of Muslims to rise, that they had made such wonderful contributions to humanity, and now this was their time. Well, neither of those things was true either, but it doesn't matter. When you're lying to people who are raised to embrace a lie, it was their rallying cry, and they rose. But what occurred had nothing to do with Arab, had nothing to do with spring, had all to do with Islam. For the past 14 or 15 years, I have been speaking against those who would call for an Islamic reformation, who would say that, unlike Christianity, that Islam has not yet gone through its reformation. It needs a reformation. What we need is to emphasize moderate and peaceful Islam and distinguish it between extremist and radical Islam. And I've said that's utter nonsense. That if Islam experienced a reformation, that what you would witness as a consequence would be a world swallowed in terrorism. You see, to reform means to go back to one's roots, to be a fundamentalist, to return to the scriptural origins of a religion or a doctrine, to return to the scriptural origins of Islam is to be a terrorist. Muhammad was a terrorist. It is to be a mass murderer. Muhammad was a mass murderer. It is to be a rapist. Muhammad was a rapist. It is to be a pedophile. Muhammad was a pedophile. It is to engage in criminal activity. Muhammad created Islam expressly as a criminal enterprise to steal, because he, like Obama, was envious of what others had produced through their effort and enterprise. The entire world will be engulfed in a religious war if there is an Islamic Reformation. And that is because, according to the Quran, there is no such thing as a moderate or peaceful Muslim. It's not my opinion. It's what the Quran states, and it's black and white. It's clear as day. The ninth surah states unequivocally that a peaceful Muslim who is not engaged in jihad, which is an armed insurrection against all humankind for the express purpose of imposing Islam on the world, ceases to be a Muslim, that they're nothing but a hypocrite, and that Allah orders good jihadist Muslims to kill them so he can torture them in hell. You see, the Obaminator called for an Islamic Reformation, and that is what we're seeing. This is not an Arab Spring. It is an Islamic Reformation, and that is the consequence, a world at war. Look how many hundreds of thousands of people have died. And yet he won't accept any blame. And yet no one seems to be able to draw the connection between what he said on that day, what was called Arab Springs, that were nothing but Islamic reformations, and the hell that has gripped Libya, Egypt, Nigeria, Niger, Chad, Mali, Kenya, Ethiopia, the Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey. And on it goes. It's a world at war. The Islamic world at war. And what you see is that is a complete ignorance of Islam, because what non-Muslims don't seem to understand is that Islam cannot embrace democracy. Islam cannot embrace capitalism. Islam is wholly dictatorial. It is surrender and submission to authority. It cannot tolerate freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedoms of any kind, especially freedoms for women and religious and racial minorities. And what the world doesn't seem to understand about Islam is that their worldview is utter and complete world dominance, but that Islam was born out of a schism between who would be responsible for that dominance, Shia or Sunni Muslims. And so in the first phase of this world war, as a result of what the Abominator ignited, we see the civil war between Sunni and Shia Muslims that has devastated Iraq and Syria and Yemen. And they will continue to fight to the death with absolutely no possibility of resolution until such time as Sunni Muslims prevail over Shia. And it will occur, it's just at the cost of millions of lives. And it will be millions of lives because the West is supplying the weapons on both sides to the Shias and Sunni Muslims. And that is what is happening in Syria. For anyone in Syria or in the West who thinks that Syria is a struggle of democratic, freedom-loving individuals against an oppressive Assad regime dictatorship, you're an idiot. If someone thinks that it is a result of the Islamic State being a belligerent, you're a fool. The fact is that it was cause and consequence. America invaded Iraq, deposed a dictator that kept terrorism and terrorists at bay. And as a result of that, this rift between Sunni and Shia Muslims was ripped open and raw. And now we see the consequence. That's all there is to it. We can't resolve this. Weapons won't fix it. Bombings won't make it better. Declarations of war will only exacerbate the problem. And now, in Tunisia. The one place that it was touted that there was a wonderful era of spring, when in fact, the Ennahda, the most fundamentalist Islamic party, came to power. Even there. No matter how hard the media tried to stage this as a reformation against a dictatorial king in favor of democratic processes, when Muslims are given the opportunity to vote, they vote as their religion dictates, for the most draconian and fundamentalist of all options. It's like Germans preceding World War II. They voted for their dictator. So there we have it. Now you find Tunisia ablaze in gunfire and in blood. At least 8 people have already been killed. And the kidnapping and murder spree isn't limited to a museum. It's widespread in the capital. And of course, next to Tunisia, we have Libya. And Libya now is nothing but terror. From east to west, from north to south. There is no government. There's no sanity. There's no civility. There is most certainly no democracy. All there is a great swath of territory with people dying and being mutilated with the very weapons America provided to provide freedom. Turns out they killed everyone. Yesterday I shared that a story that really has already come and gone in the news was a 9 on a 1 to 10 scale of importance as it will shape your future. And that was the story that Germany, France, and Italy had agreed to join a new China-led Asian investment bank after Britain also defied U.S. pressure to become a founding member of a venture seen as, in Washington, this article says, as a rival to the World Bank. It's not being set up as a rival to the World Bank. Listen, the International Monetary Fund now dominates. It's currently a French-led institution. It has been for some time. Of course, France is bankrupt. You know, it's become a communist enclave and is really in serious economic trouble. And it's the IMF that is really manipulating the world economically. And the IMF has actually created a mechanism to resolve the problem of the U.S. dollar being the world's reserve currency. They have an alternative to it. Now, the World Bank is now a small player, a bit player in the world. But what's not a bit player is the Federal Reserve, which is not part of the U.S. government, but a private banking cartel that was given central bank status in a series of clandestine moves during the Woodrow Wilson administration in 1913, founded on a sea of lies and utter secrecy. And that cartel has kept the illusion that America is solvent and functional economically through quantitative easing, because America's debt is irresolvable. It is $18 trillion in interest-bearing notes, plus another $50 to $70 trillion in unfunded mandates. That's things that the government has made promises to pay that it doesn't have the money to pay. And so, to keep the illusion that this is solvent, the Federal Reserve began this hocus-pocus act called quantitative easing. It was based entirely on the idea of we'll create the illusion of money to buy these treasury bills because we can't sell them to anyone. That way, we keep interest down, and interest on our T-bills would be catastrophically, devastatingly high if we were actually seeking investors to buy them. So they created quantitative easing. Destroy the value of the currency by creating the illusion of money, adding to the monetary supply without basis, diluting the value of each monetary instrument to create the illusion of solvency, and to use that fake money to buy bonds, which were then used to create and circulate real money. And so, with all of that occurring, the world says, why would I want to use dollars when the dollar is being devalued in this way and this aggressively? And when the United States is being so disingenuous around the world, the NSA spying on foreign governments and on Americans, and really everyone around the world, was a major blow. The realization that America, right up to the President of the United States, was engaged in torture on a worldwide basis was a major blow. America's insistence that the world continues to join its invasions of foreign countries, each of which has turned into a disaster, making a bad situation worse, is a major blow. America's interference in Ukraine, blaming what it has caused on those who are not responsible and causing economic hardship throughout Europe as a result, is a major blow. The arrogance now of America is a major blow. And so, when you combine that with the fact that this administration in particular has sought to move America's perceptions of enemies away from Islam, never mentioning Islam in its war against terror, instead using the term extremists, it has tried to cast the Russians and the Chinese as the extremists, as those villains that we should point the sharp end of our gun and bayonets against. Well, they have done what I predicted. They've all created economic means to divest themselves of America. Germany, France, and Italy joined Britain in defiance of U.S. pressure to become founding members of a bank, an economic consortium that is the brainchild of the Chinese government. And the reason is that China is the world's economic engine. And the reason is that the Obaminator, because he wants the world to love Islam as he does, wants everyone to be blinded to the fact that the Islamic State is Islamic, and that the fighting in the Middle East has something to do with Islam, and there might be a connection between Islam and 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts, which are perpetrated by Muslims, that no, you do not want to look behind that curtain. Because our real enemy, no, they're the Chinese and the Russians. Well, when you take countries and you isolate them or attempt to do so like that, you attempt to recast reality in some jaundiced worldview, those people are going to react. Surprise! And you know, the Russians and the Chinese have some skills. Yeah, they're just not all dunderheads over there. They actually have some skills. They know how to engage and play in the game. Look at China. When China decided economically to embrace free enterprise, they became the world's most vibrant economy. Fastest growing economy by far. And the world's leading manufacturer. They have skills. Do you know that some 80% America is so desperate for investment that America came up with this plan that you could buy yourself into America. If you wanted a visa to come to America, you could get one so long as you could prove that you had the means and the purpose of the visa was for you to invest. Now, invest means buy. And 80% of those who have applied for the investment visas that have proven that they have the wherewithal to go buy America are Chinese. And so now we find ourselves in a situation where the Chinese, who have real skills, are setting up an international trading bank with the express purpose of bypassing America and eliminating America's exclusive hold on the reserve currency status, which is the status that a currency have if it is used ubiquitously between other countries to buy and sell goods internationally. The Chinese says, okay, you want to play this game? You want to continually assail us and tell us that we can't have an air defense zone, but you can? That we can't spy on you, but you can spy on us? That we can't invest in our military, but you can yours? That you can peddle your influence all around the world, but we can't do the same? Okay.
Sounds like the wheels are starting to come off a little bit there.
Oh, the wheels just, I mean, you know, it's like taking the fancy car into a troubled neighborhood and going to bed that night and waking up the next morning to find it on concrete blocks and the wheels are gone. They aren't coming off. They're gone. It's only a matter of time, Scott, before this plays out. And the results is going to be the very thing that I had suggested was going to be the catastrophic change that would bring a tomorrow for Americans that they cannot envision. You know, most people, I'm in this group, you are probably too, Scott, you can't imagine anarchy in America. You can't imagine an America that is led by an outright dictator. You can't imagine economic collapse where your currency is worthless.
Yeah, I'd be in that group.
Yeah,
but
it's hard to imagine.
Listening to this, it feels like it's a lot closer.
It is. It is. And this is the catalyst that's going to, whether this particular bank, but the catalyst that will put it over the edge is America is bankrupt. It is surviving now on an illusion, and the very thing that's going to prick the balloon of illusion here is America losing its exclusive grip on reserve currency status. It is. Well, it's been obvious for years, and this is now a viable mechanism to accomplish that.
And you know what the worst part is? Is I know exactly how I'll respond.
Yes,
we're gonna go to the one thing that we have that we've been told it protects our freedoms and everything
right.
Like that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll
use it domestically to quell the riots in America.
We're gonna turn to our military.
Yeah, and the military is going to have a new foe. That's going to be American extremists. That's what's going to happen. That's how the government, those who are empowered, are going to provide freedom for Americans and make sure that everyone pays their fair share and that everyone plays along and that there are no extremists, is they're going to turn that very military against Americans. That's what's going to happen.
Some freedom, huh?
Some freedom. Oh, yeah. It's going to be some economic powerhouse. It's a house of cards and it is crumbling. The move, of course, was predictable. And the United States has lost all of its bargaining chips. Now, the United States has used blackmail for years to blackmail countries into participating. You know, when it wants to have an alliance of countries that will declare war against the Islamic State and join the bombing. It makes all sorts of both blackmail threats and bribery concessions to countries to get them to play along. The very things that if it wasn't the government engaged in blackmail and bribery, that if you as an individual did even 1/1,000,000th of what the U.S. government does, they would have your sorry behind in jail. You know, it's what we have become. And so the world now with, and you know, this is not Brazil and Venezuela and Nicaragua that have decided that they would join the Republic of South Africa and Cameroon in an experiment. This is Great Britain, Germany, France, Italy. Devastating to America.
With quick question, mm-hmm. You would probably know better than I would. You just mentioned prisons and things like that. We've been privatizing our prison system. If we lose our money, if money becomes
right.
Something that's worthless, what happens to privatized prisons?
The government will simply nationalize them. That's the same thing that's going to happen with businesses. What do the government effectively do with GM and Chrysler? They nationalize them. And when you give them to the unions, which is what we did, and then you take control of one away from those who had invested in it and the shareholders, and you create your own IPO where you're the leading shareholder and you receive the benefits, and you give one to a foreign country, you're nationalizing them. You're playing with them. Most people, I don't think, have an appreciation for, Scott, is that in a in a fascist country, which is what America is really moving to, as opposed to a communist country, although we have many socialistic, and quickly, even though we have, you know, our government is mostly socialistic at this point. But it's socialism in a fascist model. And the twist there is that in communism and socialism, for the most part, no one owns anything. The government collectively owns everything and therefore controls everything. In a fascist system, the government controls everything, although individuals can still own things. And so the difference really between ownership and control is almost meaningless. If you buy something and that all of the rules about who can use it and how it can be used and when it can be used are set by someone other than yourself, who really owns it? The person that controls it. And that is what America is becoming, is this blend. And I think it's one of the reasons why most people are unaware of this great transition that has occurred in the United States that has caused America to now have an economy where about 7 or 8% of that economy is manufacturing oriented. So it's become almost impossible to produce something with businesses that are owned by individuals or collectively by shareholders, because the government regulates everything. It makes the business collect the taxes. It makes businesses pay exorbitant amounts of taxes. It makes the businesses play by its rules in terms of health care and employee benefits and who you can hire and who you can dismiss and what you can build and what you can't and how you'll run your books in terms of your accounting methods. And so it controls them. And this is the result. So the United States did everything it could, Scott, to try to blackmail and to bribe these countries from participating in the Beijing Chinese new bank. And yet they've all gone out publicly and said, yep, we are not only part of it, we're founding partners in it. It is a devastating blow for the United States. as we find European nations, the powerhouses of the world economically, all joining. This says it comes amid prickly trade negotiations between nations and Washington, at a time when the European Union and Asian governments are frustrated. Now, this is really funny, that the U.S. Congress has held up a reform of voting rights in the International Monetary Fund. So, this journalist, if you want to call this man or woman that, is so jaundiced economically and politically that rather than putting the blame where it belongs on both parties for bribing people to vote for them by creating this entitlement government, by pretending that Social Security is a right, by expanding Medicare and Medicaid, by imposing this Herculean military establishment, that they have indebted this country, but no, it just wants to blame Congress, because there's a lot of Republicans there. A German finance minister said Europe's biggest economy would become a major trade player with Beijing and would be a founding member of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. You hear the name? The Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. This is not a bank that is being created for the purpose of manipulating world economies. That is what the International Monetary Fund is about. This is not a bank that's being established for the express purpose of the communist strategy of from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, and to play the game of wealth redistribution. No, no, not at all. This is an infrastructure bank. What is the infrastructure of international trade? Reserve currency. It's the mechanism. How are goods going to be sold? Are they going to be sold, valued, and traded in U.S. dollars? Or are they going to be bought and sold and traded in another currency? That's the infrastructure. That is what this is about. Infrastructure. It's about bypassing the United States. And we have done this to ourselves. The French finance minister confirmed that France's participation will be as a founding partner and highlights the agreement between Germany, France, and Italy in this matter. The Italian Treasury said that Europeans had agreed to work to ensure that this new institution follows the best standards and practices in terms of governance. Governance of what? The world, the means and rules regarding international trade. Safeguards for what? Buyers and sellers and international trade. Debt. And procurement policies. What are procurement policies? It's the means by which nations and individuals within those nations buy goods from individuals within other nations. Those are the procurement policies. And right now, almost all of it is done in dollars. And to do this in dollars, nations must hold enormous amounts of dollars to enable their citizens to buy and sell from other countries using other currencies. But with this procurement mechanism in place as a new investment, which is purchase infrastructure, guess who gets bypassed? The U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar doesn't have to be held as the means, the infrastructure to procure goods, then guess what? Then they're not going to hold dollars. And when they stop holding dollars, what happens to the value of the dollar? What happens to a country that whose dollar ownership was in T-bills, because at least it would generate some modicum of interest, and it was an easy trading mechanism, when they no longer have to have dollars. And the world points out that quantitative easing is nothing but an illusion. You could wake up in a month of weekends and find on Monday morning that it's all for naught, that your savings is worthless, that your currency is worthless, that your government is in absolute anarchy. And then Scott's right. The government is going to rely on the only thing that it will have that will be at that point functional, which would be the command and control structure of the U.S. military, because it can give orders to the U.S. military, and they have no freedom. They will follow them, and they have weapons, and they will deploy those weapons against what will be viewed as extremists. The whole rhetoric and mechanism for dealing with extremism is already well established in this country. And those of us who protest will be the victims. And those who do not protest and who go along will be victimized. That is our future, folks. This is how we're going to get there. I know this was a modest little story, lost in the big picture of the news and world events. It appeared briefly in one periodical and is now gone. A fleeting figment of ancient history. But I'm here to tell you, this will have long, lingering ripple effects throughout the world.